Welcome to the Green Thumbs Up podcast, the podcast for landscapers by landscapers, and proudly brought to you by our proud sponsor, Domus Nursery. And today, we are delighted to have someone you may have met before. It's great to have you back, Matthew Lunn. How are you?
Hey, Benno.
Yeah, so, can you tell us what have you been up to in the last sort of year or so?
Well, look, after I left Liawa and NGIWA at the back end of 2022, set out on a project with Turf Australia, and sadly, it just didn't work out. So I think in life, you sort of look back on those moments when things don't always work out, and most importantly, you learn from it. So by the middle of last year, then set about having some discussions with various people and caught up particularly with John Colwell. And John, of course, is heavily involved in Araluen Botanic Park. And at the beginning of this year, I've been engaged to actually write their landscape master plan for the next 20 to 25 years. So it's an exciting opportunity that, I know, one or two other people who know what I do now have said, gosh, I wish, you know, they wish they could have had that opportunity. So I think it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to get hold of a space like Araluen and have an impact on it. So that's part A.
Yeah.
And then there is a part B. A good friend of mine, David Underwood, who we all know well,
lovely guy,
decided that his time at Domus had finished. He wanted to get back into environmental science, which is his main background and degree. And so Colin Grimm, of course, at Domus, had a couple of conversations, and I've actually taken on David's old role in the business development manager's role. So I'm having an absolute ball, Benno.
Yeah, to be honest. Tell.
I'm absolutely having ball because I'm back.
You got to jump in your step.
Yeah, I'm working in two spaces. One is design and one is actually around plants and people. And I guess that was the big thing I missed was the people. And I've always said this to you guys in Liawa and NGIWA, that associations are built on people. And if you have those relationships, you'll have a very strong association. So I was missing that, and that opportunity with Domus to then start being around a team again was something I couldn't miss. And I'm having one of the best times in my 40-year career in horticulture.
Yeah, you look very, very happy and like you're in your element. You really do.
Yep.
So the new role, Matt. So what's the business development role entail day to day?
Look, I think first of all, Domus, and I think this is something that for all the landscapers out there, you can be a great landscaper, but if you're not a business manager as well or business driven, you're not going to have a decent landscape business. So the thing with Domus Nursery, the first thing that I've picked on very, very, very quickly is that it is extremely well run, right down to everything that they do, literally down to the last minuscule. Even we all have our names on our mugs, you could say, almost in the lunchroom. But it's extremely well run. And because of that, that was partly one of the reasons I wanted to go and work with Domus. But in the business development role, my job is to support all those great people that work in that nursery. And working besides Colin is obviously very, very exciting, to try and take a little bit of weight off him as well. So within that role, Colin and I will be looking, and also with the retail team, at new plant varieties that we can start to introduce into the market. We'll also be looking very closely at our customer relationships. Again, coming back to running associations, the thing that I learned so much was building those relationships and engagement. So I want to make sure we build on the great work Domus has already done. Everyone always speaks very highly of Domus.
Oh, they're a fantastic operation.
The family, the Grimm family. And I want to make sure that my role is just to sort of continue that and just add some new dimensions to those relationships. So yes, we are all about plants. Domus is all about plants, but it's beyond that. So we become the place for solutions as well. The plants that we grow at Domus, there's over 1,000 different species of plant being grown up there, and varieties, I should say. So my job, I believe, is also to get out to the landscapers, get out to the local government organisations, councils, shires, and also schools, universities, and the retail sort of outlets, and actually give them great landscape gardening solutions. Mm. So the plants that they are putting into those spaces are the right plants, or if they're in a nursery, they're the right, into a, say, a garden centre, they're the right plants for the consumer to come in and actually have an answer to a problem within their landscape and some plants for the future, so sustainable plants as well.
Yeah, very, very interesting, Matt.
Yeah.
And yeah, so you've known the Grooms for a little while now?
Came into Perth in 94 to run Curtin University, and very quickly Domus became a nursery to go and get stock from. So I got to know Colin. Brian, of course, is his dad. And suddenly there was a link there, which I didn't know existed, where Brian also trained at the RHS Gardens Wisley in England, where I trained.
Yeah, wow.
I'm not as old as Brian, but and I don't remember him being there, but it's lovely. The other day we were talking about Wisley and the importance of the RHS and the work that they do. Of course, their background, the RHS, is the Chelsea Flower Show. So it was great to have those conversations. So there's always been that sort of link. But I think yourself would say, if you go and visit a nursery like Domus in particular, the ambience of the place, the way that it's set up, it's just, I'll tell you, I go there, what, 2 or 3 days a week, and I'm in heaven.
Yeah,
you know, it's
yeah,
just
yeah.
glorious surroundings, just lovely.
Yeah, fantastic. And yeah, what a summer we've just had, Matt. So how is Domus focusing on the feedback they've heard from clients with, you know, they might have tried plants in a hot driveway spot, well, and they didn't work. So
I think, to be honest, Benno, I think the nursery itself suffered a bit too. I mean, it's very evident. We were talking to a chap called Jurg, who runs the production side of the nursery, and just looking around the nursery, you can see plants are just suffering. And then suddenly there was that turn a couple of weeks ago where we had the cooler mornings, the later, you know, the day length is changing too.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
a real sign that plants just suddenly perk up.
Yeah,
they literally
yeah, yeah.
perk up. And I was talking to Jurg earlier this morning about it, that, you know, you can see across the nursery plants that were just hanging in there suddenly have perked up. So it wasn't so much the feedback from landscapers and some of our other customers. It was we could see it happening inside the nursery. It has been extremely hot. And I had a call from actually a Liawa member about some plants that they planted. They were Domus plants. And these plants had gone in during one of the hottest days of the year. You know, I think it was January or February mm-hmm. time. And where they had been planted, you know, there's a fence, there's a small bed about 50 to 75 centimetres wide and a concrete driveway. Well, the reflective heat off that, can you imagine? I mean, yeah. it might be 40 on the Bureau of Meteorology telling us that's what it should be, but it's probably about 48 or 40, you know, because that temperature just goes up 4 or 5 degrees. And we're going to see more of that.
Yeah, so plant selection is absolute key for those sort of spots as
It is. It's not just about plant selection. The sad thing is it's for landscapers, which they're going to have a real problem with, is that they obviously want to operate for 12 months of the year, and they can't just say, well, in a job in November, well, we'll do part of the job, but we'll wait till autumn to plant it out. They've got other jobs they want to get onto. So there's going to be this issue during the real hot periods, and we know when it's going to happen, and though we had it early in October, we had some very hot weather in October because I think we went to the cricket and they're bloody boiling you know, at Optus. But I think landscapers are just going to have to be more wiser in the way that they plant, they prepare the soil properly. They've got to get this soil prep right, because planting straight into sand is like planting into an oven. Sand just warms up so quickly, as you know. And just walking around your garden earlier today, I can see the growth in it in less than 6-7 months since I last saw you. Sand is great, it pushes plants along really quickly, but the bad thing about it is, boy, it gets hot quicker, really hot. So I think landscapers are just going to have to be very wised up to when they are planting out, you know, how they approach that. So making sure the soil's prep right, it's that reticulation that
drip
goes
irrigation.
In.
That
it has to be right. And unfortunately, sometimes with landscapers, they fall into the problem, which isn't their fault, I guess, to a certain degree, is that they rely very much on the automated irrigation system that they've installed. The client then is obviously making sure that that's working, but the client might not fully understand that it might show it's working, but a drip is blocked. So, you know, and that plant suddenly fails, but the irrigation system's on. Yeah, but it's you can't quite see every drip or spray's not coming on. So I think landscapers are going to have to really perhaps look at their contracts and the way that they manage their contracts in terms of how long that they're going to say that that landscape is worth the plants. Are the plants actually guaranteed to a certain time or period? or even work with clients. I mean, I remember when I was running my landscape business, I tried to do as much design work during that January, February, March period and not be, be outside in the heat, but be you know, that whole problem of having to buy plants during the hottest time of the year. So it is going to be a problem. But as part of that, searching for myself after I left Turf Australia was to go and walk the Cape to Cape.
Now, the Cape to Cape walk, I hear,
is a fantastic walk. 6-day walk, and you start up at Dunsborough, and you make all your way down to Augusta. And it's a bit of a long walk, and there's some pretty tricky moments walking on sand for 2 or 3 hours. But during that time, I had time not just to reflect about my career, but to reflect about the plants I saw on that journey. And you know, seeing West Ringers just growing in cliff faces, acacias and banksias literally growing, as I say, on cliff faces. And you're thinking, yeah, but we then go to a nursery and we buy that A plant or B name of plant. And we're going to put soil improvements in. We're going to put wetting agents. We're going to mulch it and all the other things and prune it. Whereas in reality, there are plants that we can grow that don't need that. And we've just got to get that establishment phase, get through that establishment phase. And then the next, I always say 12 months in many cases. I've got grevilleas at Gidgee Gannup growing in rock, and they're doing extremely well, So there is a bit of plant selection. I think we're going to have to look at that. And my discussions with customers, the Domus customers, has been so far is dwarfer varieties to solve this problem of smaller space gardens. We're seeing that coming in now.
Yeah.
You're seeing more apartments. You're seeing the smaller space. You know, the quarter acre blocks become less of a quarter acre block. People sell off a bit of their land. So I think the plants, because the problem we have is we go to a garden centre, we go to a nursery, and these plants say 4 or 5 metres, but we love it. You know, honey gem. You know, grevillea honey gem, beautiful plant. I've got it at home, but I'm in Gidgee Gannup with space, so I can do that. But if I try and grow it in your garden, you're going to have to prune it. You're going to have to keep it tight, and you can.
Mm-mm.
But if you're not a horticulturist, you go, oh, well, I didn't realise I was going to do that. Okay, I didn't quite read all the label details.
So, and the labels, they don't always turn out.
They don't match up.
Sometimes that 2-metre plant grows a little bit more.
So I think as nursery, as a nursery, our role is to find solutions. It's for home gardeners, landscapers, to make life a little bit easier. Doesn't mean any of the range at Domus will change, but we'll just look at the varieties we have in it. For example, I've got Westringer Aussie Box here. It's one of the dwarf variety Westringers. You've got things like Traclosporum Flat Mat. I thought I'd better bring one in that's named after me, but Flat Mat. I'll be honest, I'd never really used Traclosporum Flat Mat as a plant. But here's a climber which actually will grow prostrate. And the solution for that, of course, is being able to fill ground cover. And you would know from a sort of permaculture type gardening, you cover your ground.
Absolutely.
You don't leave it bare. I think there's 4 or 5 major things you should do if you're doing organic gardening. And I think making sure the ground is covered, i.e. mulch.
Absolutely.
And plants...
Living mulch is better.
A living mulch, like Traclosporum, just does the job so well. I've seen it used in roundabouts. Shires and councils obviously find that as a cracking one. The other one I like, of course, is this one here.
That's one of my favourite.
Banksia blechnifolia.
Yeah.
Don't you love it?
Yeah. It's such a tough, robust, long-lived plant.
Tough.
And gets better with age.
Bingo. Yeah. Spot on. Again, saw a lot of that when I was coming back from the Cape up from Augusta. So roundabouts, again, used. And it thickens out quite nicely. You need to plant it. You know, if you've got a square metre, you could get away with one plant per square metre, but I'd be probably quite tempted to sort of thicken that out.
Yeah, I usually go 3 to 4.
Exactly, and try and thicken, because it will grow itself outwards, but it just...
takes a good 12 to 18 months.
I think you need a few just to really nicely fill it out. Yeah. But once you see that flower at a ground cover level, it's just, it looks strange because Banksias traditionally are sort of high up and sort of like candles on a Christmas tree or lights on a Christmas tree. This one actually stays prostrate. The other thing is, again, growing it at Gidgee, I'm finding limited water. I mean, it's on rock again with a bit of topsoil over the top, and it's doing really well. And it's just been through those very very hot days.
Mm.
So those are just a few plants that quickly I'm finding work well at the moment. And I think this is the thing that the role I'm in is to engage with landscapes. landscapers and give them landscape solutions.
Absolutely.
Maybe I should write a book. Write a book on landscape solutions. But I think they landscapers fall into the. This is what they've planted before. It's like, if you go home and make a pizza, you probably would put the same toppings on over a period of a month or two, because that's what I always put on there, a bit of ham or whatever and a bit of pineapple. But you've got to push yourself outside the barrier. And I always remember when I was designing gardens, I'd go to one client and design the garden. I go to the next client and go, oh, well, that really worked in garden one, so I'll do it again in garden two. And I started realizing I was using the same plants and my gardens were starting to look very similar. I was using the same materials. Mm-hmm. I think to be a good landscape designer or even a good landscaper is that ability to be creative in spaces and using different plants for different spaces, using different materials in different spaces. Because you then find when you've got a real difficult garden to do, you actually have the skill set to take it on and understand it. And I've been in this game 40 years. And 40 years I've built up a lot of experience and knowledge of trialing and testing different plants in England as well. I worked in England as well. So when I going to Domus, I get so excited because I'm just looking at all these different plants for new solutions within the landscape. And I know some of these are quite – I mean, here's another one. And Elyria. Elyria? Is that Oxalaris? Is that right?
Yeah, Auxiliaris.
To most people, that's a native plant, Australian native – West Australia.
WA
plant.
June plant.
And there's a dwarf variety of it. There's tall – I've got it growing in my own home garden about a metre. Again, on rock with a bit of paddock soil across the top, and it gets no water, does well. Now, I love that plant, but I love it because of that grey silver foliage. And that's the other trick I always feel in landscaping is understanding the colours that you get. I'm not talking about flowers here, I'm just talking about foliage and different textures. So I've got also here acacia limelight.
Yeah, acacia cognata, isn't it?
Yeah, great plant. In fact, Domus do a lovely standard in that, which would look great in pots as a feature out on a patio or on a apartment area. But you got the silver. That on its own, the acacia in a garden bed and other greens with it, it probably wouldn't pop. It does have that nice soft foliage, one that you want to touch and feel. But I pop that bit of silver behind it, suddenly that green starts to even pop more. So if plants like Elyria, I love because, A, they're drought tolerant, but secondly, I've got this great foliage to start working with, which makes it really a nice, exciting sort of part of the words I was thinking today, driving over to see you, was having that palette, having a landscape palette of plants to work with.
That's adaptable.
That are adaptable. Yeah, that's how I see my role, is to actually understand plants better and see the adaptation of some of those plants and what they've really done. So when you go on the Caped Cape, when you go on the Bibliman and other places doing these types of walks, you can see very clearly where I remember there was, what's the other plant? You know, the silver foliage plant, which everyone was using. And now Canal Rock, what's it called? Leucophyta.
Oh, Leucophyta brown.
Is it still called that? I thought it changed its botanical name.
I learned a lot of these a little while ago, so I'm not going to sort of...
And I'll never forget, I was down in Albany.
I haven't kept up with the changing of the names recently.
You get out to Albany by the large wind farm down there, and you see just growing again just on the embankments going down into the ocean. Things like canal rock growing on the side, that type of plant. And you can see it's been buffeted by winds, high winds. Been literally, there's nothing there to support it.
Yeah.
And they do really well. And I guess those are the plants we should really be working with. On the other side of it, I think landscapers, again, need to make sure they understand it's all about location, site for site. So, again, whenever you're going into a garden, it's understanding not only the orientation of the garden, north, south, east and west, because each face has a different amount of sunlight, each presents different opportunities. So I've got in my own home, on the east side, as the sun comes up on the east, I've got hydrangeas in pots underneath a veranda. I've got indoor plants, plants that you would traditionally perhaps might even grow indoor. They get the morning sun, then they get protection. But then the veranda starts to heat up and it's like a little tropical zone in there. So landscapers, again, need to have those strong understandings of site for site and then where plants will really do best.
Absolutely. And those radiant heat spots and those really shady areas, which also get deep winter shade and wet soils, they can be really challenging too.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you've got to know the kind of the tropicals that or the natives that can take those conditions.
Yep. And I think we mustn't be frightened. I've always been
It's a lot of trial and error for sure.
Definitely trial and error. But then we get into this is a native garden or a garden of the future about plants that are just Australian natives, you know, a true. I mean, I must admit, I always get a little bit concerned when I see kangaroo paws planted next to petunias and things like that. It doesn't quite.
You want to blend them well.
Yeah. You want to tell a story within a design. That's the thing. Because ultimately, you're taking plants and putting them into a landscape or an environment, and it's got to look natural.
For sure.
It's got to look natural. I'm sure if we spoke to Tony Green about ponds and building designs within ponds, you can't make it too rigid because the rocks don't do that in natural form. So your planting needs to – it's always – it amuses me when you see two acacia cognatas planted in a row and then something – there's five of the – you always plant odd numbers, I was always taught, and it's true.
Yeah.
Get a more balanced effect of weave within the landscape.
Sure.
But the other point, Benno, I think is so critical with the design now of the future is getting that palette right but understanding it isn't wrong. It isn't wrong to combine ornamental plants from other regions of the world with some of our Australian
natives. I think we need to. Because of all the microclimates we're now faced with on small blocks with lots of shade and hot areas. Yeah. So,
look, I mean, here's another one. This is one of the Adansanthus, and Domus, of course, do fantastic amount of work.
That would be a kangaroo paw.
That is Adansanthus. That's a kangaroo paw, 101, horticulture, bush glow. And it has gone over, but I brought it in purposely for that reason, is that the newer varieties which have been bred, they keep on giving. You trim off the old foliage. I've got this one actually growing in my home garden. You probably think I've got a Domus garden. It's not. Just happens to be some of the plants I selected. I love these smaller varieties. These have been bred, and you're just getting constant flowers coming through. You take out the old foliage. Mm-hmm. I love the larger varieties too. You know, those real big reds and
yellow, big orange.
And, you know, the oranges, and they're lovely. But here is a plant here. Could I work that plant into a Mediterranean garden design? Of course I could.
For sure.
Of course I could. I can tell you, I've got this plant growing with one of my, on the east side of my home, in a succulent garden.
Mm-mm.
And it's actually used around, it's around some lovely cotyledons.
You know,
the silver cotyledons, that lovely grey foliage. I've got one variety, I can't remember it, but it's got lovely crinkly leaves. And then I've got this popping up around it, which is orange. So I've got this lovely orange. So I've got the greys in it. Mm-hmm. So here I'm now working with colours, texture. I'm not talking about that this is bred from Australia and the other plant is from another part of the world. I'm actually just building up a picture within my garden.
And that'll take harsh hills conditions?
As long as the rabbits don't get near it, a Gidgee, which I have a real problem with rabbits. The other plant group I wanted to finally talk about are the herbaceous perennials. Because, again, if we talk herbaceous perennials, we get into Agapanthus straight away in our heads, which do well here. This year, they have suffered, unless you've got water and giving them some drink and well-mulched roots because they produce this fibrous mat, is, you know, they're just that dead foliage just ruins the appearance of them. They look great up till Christmas, and then they're really struggling. But can we find herbaceous perennials that really we can start to use into the garden? And I think some of the grasses. I'd certainly think something. I'm not talking about the larger Pennisetums, the Carexes. There are varieties of grasses out there that we could add into the landscape. Yeah. They're quite tough. They are tolerant. They are drought tolerant. Yeah. They are drought tolerant. But there are, I believe, we can start to look at some herbaceous plants which are very drought tolerant and bring them into the design.
And if we want to follow that European meadow effect, we could use some of our native grasses like the Ostrostipes and stuff like that, which are really tough.
Then we're now starting to talk. And if you get up to what's the big gorges up north, beautiful gorges.
Oh,
Carrageenie.
That one, yeah.
Get into Carrageenie and I always talk about the language of the landscape. So whenever I visit a new place, I'm letting it talk to me. I'm trying to understand it. Why is it doing that? Why is it gnarled? And, you know, you go through a place like Northampton and you see all the trees at an angle. That's the winds created that. So if you go into a landscape, read it, try and read it. So when I came and drove into your driveway, the first thing I'm doing is I'm trying to quickly looking at your plants, the tearing effect. You've got the blechnifolia there on the front. You've got something else happening there. I'm reading what you're doing. I think we have a great opportunity to introduce those sort of herbaceous plants as well within it. And maybe, you know, I know, you know, things like salvias, and Colin and I have this argument about salvias. There's some great salvias Domus produce, great salvias. But there are some other ones I think that we could be looking at, some of the silver foliage ones, which do well. They seem to take the heat.
They sure do.
So I think this period for a horticulturist of the hot heat.
It's been a good lesson for a lot of us, I think.
It's been a good lesson to say, hey, what's hanging on?
Yeah.
What's hanging on? What other ones are shutting shop up and saying, nah, we can't do this anymore. So yeah. I think it's been a great lesson.
Absolutely. Well, that's covered a fair bit for today, don't you think, Matt? Anything else you want to talk about?
Well, I'm just going to say it's great to be back.
Yeah, it's great to have you back.
And I hope Leo was going from strength to strength. That was always my hope. And Christine's, I'm sure, doing a great job. But it's nice to be back on the waves and airwaves. And I'll certainly be catching up with you next month.
Yep.
We'll be looking at some more landscape solutions.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Matt.